I am unashamed. What about you?
So we're working a little bit ahead. This episode is going to air January 2nd, I think. Is that right, Josh, Cade? And but we're still a little bit before Christmas, so we're going to get a little bit of a time off, which is kind of
because we don't want to be filming during the holidays.
Exactly.
We'll everybody be able to take some time off and they clear their head.
Enjoy our Christmas. So Happy New Year on the episode, but we're still not quite there yet.
If we make it.
If we make it. That's right.
We're
if the Lord comes back, this is going to be really some episode for the ages.
We could watch it in heaven.
We could.
But I think we'll be busy doing other things.
Yeah, I think so, too. There's a lot of questions. I got a lot of questions from heaven. So we just had Jeppico's in town, I saw. So we're going to do we're having a big birthday bash, which actually this is the second year in a row. I'd forgotten last year we actually filmed a little bit. Dad gave Mom, as far as I know, the first, like, big present you'd ever gotten. You and Phyllis went and actually bought her a something necklace, maybe a fleur-de-lis. Do you remember that was last year today.
They actually filmed it.
Yeah, we filmed it because it was such a happening.
It was the first.
You're probably good for 10 years. I mean, you waited 50 to purchase some jewelry. So I'm figuring.
Well, at this point, that may not be what you want to put off. You know, decades.
Do you have a backup plan for this year? What are you going with this year, Phil?
No. That was her birthday today. Today the 21st?
It is.
My woman is about 70. Uh-oh. She's about 74.
We need to nail
it. She's saying he nailed it.
I was fixed to say we need to nail that down before the party.
Yeah.
And now he got it, 74. So we're going to have a big feed at our house tonight, this is the official kickoff to the Christmas week for the Robertsons. A lot of food.
Always a big feed.
Always a big feed. So last year we did it at the house and we did that, but I don't know how we'll top it. Jeppico's back. Jep's moving back to Louisiana, which we're excited about that, or is planning to this summer, which is kind of nice to have the erring Texan back in the fold.
Yeah.
Which would be good.
Yeah, what was really disturbing last night, I was playing cards, and my wife sent me, it said, schedule:. And every day from now all the way to almost New Year's Day.
You're booked.
It's incredible. So I don't usually do the meme thing.
Yeah.
But I found this.
I like to do memes.
I found this kid. He looks about 1 year old, and it just says right below him. He's sitting on the couch. It says me, and he just falls over asleep on the couch. Nothing violent. He literally was so sleepy he just fell over.
And that was you.
And so I sent that to her, and then she sent me like the most touching, like almost syrupy. You know, with great blessings comes great responsibility. I'll be there by your side each step of the way. And like lots
live
of
out what she mapped out for you to do.
Yeah, lots of hearts.
I don't operate
and
like that.
Kisses.
Your mother would come to me and say, "Listen, I mean, it looks like a lot of coming and going here."
Well, I mean, it was it's all good stuff.
You know, why don't you? You know, you want to do like one of these.
I was actually thankful that I know a schedule.
You went like all 10 of them or whatever.
Yeah, but you got, so you're probably, you're making a trek at some point.
Well, they're coming here.
Okay.
The family. So, I mean, like, she's like, Friday night, you're cooking, you know, our family. Saturday morning, you're cooking breakfast.
Right.
You know, that's Christmas Day, which.
That's your traditional non-hunt day. You still doing that?
Well, you know what? Last year she said, knock yourself out, just be back.
Oh, because it was just y'all, yeah.
So I was like. Okay. So, I mean, that is one day that I will take off if she likes. I figure if I hunt 59 days and she never says a complaining word, I'll take one day and I'll cook breakfast and have Christmas together. I kind of enjoy it.
So I don't know, I guess we've talked about it before on here. We do kind of a seafood Cajun food Christmas because most people kind of do a rerun. We used to do a rerun of Thanksgiving with the turkey and the ham and all that, but you know, I kind of feel like we did that, so it's kind of nice. We fry shrimp and
we gotta have the Cajun Christmas fried oysters.
On that early when we got Stone said, you know, you don't start the podcast at 11 o'clock. It's 10:20. Let's go fry some oysters right now. Didn't you say you had a bucket of oysters? I said, yeah. He said, let's do it right now. Well, by the time I got there, he had
You've already eaten oysters?
The peanut oil was on when I stepped inside. Then I got the oysters ready.
Well, I appreciate the heads up on that.
I missed that memo.
Oysters for breakfast.
Martinez and Stone.
Yeah.
And Cy was there. Cy dragging up in the rear. You know, he heard about them oysters. He said, So
did he eat any?
Did they eat any?
I was wondering if Cy
didn't eat but a gallon. But I mean, you know what I mean? A whole gallon.
The whole carton.
And then I had
some raw ones last night. I bought some and got some bull shrimp. And man, they were good. I mean, this time, you know, this is prime time for
them raw. We've had them a couple of days. I've been eating them raw, just right out of the, you know,
canal.
Little sauce, yeah.
Yeah.
But they needed to be fried. So, I mean, quick cooked. So
right.
I went with the fried oyster today.
Well, the last podcast I said that Si and I, one of the reflections was, you know, about me being a grandpa, and I hadn't had an argument with Si. He went right to the line this morning. It was like somebody whispered in his ear that I was bragging.
Your years, the more they mount, you'll see more of that.
Well, he went right to the line because it, you know, he said, "You boys, you putting these decoys over in front of y'all." So, and I said, "What's your point?" And what was his line? He said, "You've got the decoy." It almost rhymed. You've employed the decoys to benefit you. I didn't know what that meant. I said, well, "What?"
I didn't notice that about the decoy spread.
Most of the decoys this morning were in front of y'all, and I was like, "Exhibit A." Whatever you're talking about.
No duck got out of there alive this morning.
No, we got them all. We wiped
them. So apparently the decoys were placed just right.
Well, but he was saying.
Whatever came by, nothing left there alive.
Yeah.
But times are hard because we saw about, you know, about 8 to 10 ducks and we killed them. Right. That was it.
No, but what almost sparked the argument was I said, I can't help it if the dead ducks are piling up on my side. I said, trust me, it has nothing to do with the decoys.
So I said, well, here's a news flash. You know, I'm killing most of the ducks anyway.
Well,
so
he says that all the
time. For our viewers that don't understand hunting, Si is shooting the equivalent of a pop gun. He's the only man in the blind. If I was standing in the decoys and I was to get shot, I would say, I choose Si. And I really don't think it would hurt me because it's just a pop, because he doesn't want the recoil.
Right.
So he's shooting a really lightweight 20
small
gauge.
Small gun, and then, you know, then he's claiming ducks at 100 yards.
All
right.
Yeah,
you can't, yeah.
Because if you shoot simultaneously with someone else, it gives you the illusion that you killed it.
Yeah.
So no matter what happens, especially the way Si's
he basically just gets up, boom, 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 sets his gun.
Well, he looks at what's falling, and he says... Because then...
Every time I pull the trigger, ducks fall. But, you know...
Well, today
that doesn't necessarily
mean three men on your right.
There's a lot of gunfire going
on. Today, the furthest duck that fell, he claimed it was a wood duck. I didn't shoot it, but I saw multiple shots ring out.
Yeah.
Well, the rest of the morning, so I said, "Yeah, that one I cut out there at about 100." Yeah. Which means 100.
I didn't argue with him, but I'm the one that.
Well, you know what's funny?
When he brought up,
Jay said the same thing.
Yeah, that he noticed.
So Jay was I was going through my schedule this morning that I got from my lovely wife, and Jay noted. He's like, "What? You made yourself a schedule?" I was like, "No, my wife made me a schedule." He's like, "Yeah, I mean, no. Well, one of them was our cousin getting married."
Yeah,
and I was like, "Oh no, I will be there," because Missy said, "Yes, you're going on this," and Jay was like, "And we know. I mean, she is." The mom of the bride is just one of the most graceful,
awesome
character women on the planet. And she's, I was like, if you have that kind of character and that kind of joy, I was like, I'm going to your daughter's wedding.
Who is the daughter?
Lulu. It's Lulu's daughter.
Yeah. Which is the name
Lulu's daughter.
Yeah.
And so look, here's Jay. What did he say about that? He's like, well, I'd plan on not going to that. And I said, why? He said, because if two people are dumb enough to get married in duck season, I don't want to support that.
What a mindset.
So I spoke the truth in love. I said, you need to repent and be more like Jesus, because that is terrible.
The only time I've ever come close to that sort of thinking is when I was doing, in 2019, the LSU championship year, I was doing Johanna Godwin's wedding on the night of the LSU-Alabama game. And I was like, you know, Johanna, I love you. I helped raise you, but you have put me to the test. I mean, and the wedding was scheduled right as the game is going on. So and the handful of people that did come were out there. I all saw they're watching it on their phone, you know. And I'm trying. It's hard to do a wedding and you're trying to figure out what the score of the game. I mean, that was a.
That's when somebody during the process, in that case, somebody should have said, you know what, we love you and we're supporting your marriage, but how about, let's move it 2 hours.
Yeah, let's move one way or the other.
You know, well, yeah, or 2 hours. I mean, I move it
I'm
2 hours.
I'm just noticing, you know, but I guess it goes with the territory. But as your children, then your grandchildren, then your great-grandchildren start coming along, what happens is the birthday schedule begins to start filling up quite a few calendar days.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's...
Well, it's the
between
same...
Between the birthday parties and then the Christmas and New Year, I mean, it's something.
It was the same problem.
Marriages.
Well, it's the same problem we had last year, Dad, on the Christmas, is we kind of, Mom has always ordered the seafood stuff. Well, last year, and then we had a couple of years where we had, you know, we were, for whatever reason, we were in town, but we were back at your house last year. And you don't realize how big our family is now. Ooh. I mean, with all the extra people that are married in now. And so... You're frying shrimp. I mean, we're having our normal thing. And I look up, and there's people still coming in. I'm looking at the pile of shrimp just going down. I was like, we ain't gonna cover it. Whoever's in last is gonna get what the little boy shot at, which is what Granny said. So the last three or four, Jay was deer hunting or something. He came in. I said, well, we got a little sausage over here.
I remember that because I have about 6 pounds of boiled shrimp coming that will be there and about 10 pounds of fried shrimp.
Shrimp to fry.
And then I hope that makes it, but that's a lot of shrimp.
Well,
16 pounds
of shrimp.
That's a lot of shrimp.
It's a lot of shrimp.
A lot of shrimp.
But I'm telling you, like, and these new ones, Willie's additions into his family, this Christian and Jacob, the one married to Sadie and Bella, you talk about eat. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and Christian, I mean, he looks like, his body looks like a Greek god, you know, mm-hmm. like Achilles or somebody, but that man can put away some food. I mean, mm-hmm. they're big eaters. So I told Willie, I said, Willie, you're going to have to start contributing and bringing like a big dish just because of your...
Well, Phil calls him a gullion, man.
A slum gullion.
A gullion. Just throw everything in the pot and cook it for a couple hours and shovel it out.
Well, at least has shamed him. We had a group text going about the food tonight.
It's not a gullion. It's a slum gullion.
What's the difference in a gullion and a slum?
Slum gullion. You slum. Just think about it. It'll come to you. The slum gullion is when you look at it, you say, "What in the world is that?"
Yeah, you just got land blasted on that one.
I mean, it's still not registering. I don't. I've never heard that term.
While you're looking that up, let's take a break.
Hi, it's Jason Whitlock. Have you secured your spot for Roll Call 2.0, my annual men's summit in Nashville, Tennessee? Are you looking for an opportunity to fellowship with other believers, to come together across the identity lines the left have drawn to divide us? Join me, country music star John Rich, and Blaze founder Glenn Beck in Nashville on Saturday, June 1st for Roll Call 2.0. We're going to listen to great music, eat fantastic barbecue, and hear inspiring speeches from myself, Glenn Beck, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, Pastor E.W. Jackson, and many more. Let's quit letting the satanic left sift us like wheat. Let's come together as men and talk about the sacrifices we must make to restore the unity and shared values that made our country the envy of the world. Visit fearlessarmyrollcall.com to secure your spot.
Well, actually, there is a Slumgullion stew.
That's what I'm talking about.
You need
to widen your circle.
The
podcast. I know you're into the internet and all that stuff.
I'm not into it. It's just, okay. It's a noun.
The podcast has turned into a vocabulary lesson for Jay style.
This all right. It's a stew of meat, vegetables, potatoes, etc.
Yeah.
Well, that's a poor definition.
Well, the et cetera is the slum part of the gullion, I think.
You are correct.
A beverage made weak or thin as watery tea, coffee, or the like. So I guess it's a combination of that. You know, these people are right.
Nothing but coffee. Yeah.
That was number two. That's an alternate. So I guess you could order a drink.
They get drinks, and you know, if you looked at what's in them, you're like, whoa.
That's
a Slumgullion. You don't know what's in there.
That's right. Which that's the idea is, but Willie's always been like that. He'll take something and it's perfect, and he'll say, this is the best thing I ever ate. But then when he cooks it, he's got to add.
That's right.
He cannot do it without adding his own signature.
That's correct.
So I'll start eating something. I was like, man, Willie, this is great, but what is all this? And he said, well, I thought I'd add this. And he just keeps adding. And I mean, it's.
Yep.
Yeah, here's the key part of the definition. It's usually made from whatever is on hand.
There you go.
I don't like the direction.
That means rummaging through the refrigerator to get, you know, a little more stuff out of it.
I would love to say, you know, it's time to eat this. I mean, it's been in here a while.
That's right.
We would go to a church function and somebody would tell Dad, you know, because we were always really finicky and funny about it, but they'd tell Dad, yeah, I had a bunch of stuff in my fridge. It was about to go bad, so I put it all together in a big casserole. I want you to try it, Mr. Phil.
Why would people do that?
I said, yeah, I'll get right on that.
Miss Kay, why don't you get over there and try that? Yeah, that's pretty funny. But yeah, so food obviously is a big part of the holiday tradition with the Robertsons, especially this particular
Jesus
week.
And food, how can you go wrong?
So speaking of the wedding, I'm doing the stepping in. The guy that was originally supposed to do the wedding can't.
Oh, so you're doing
it. So I was the backup. Lisa and I have been doing Claire and Grant's premarital. You know, it's interesting, Jace, because we did premarital counseling with couples for years. And so now I don't really do it anymore. We're on the road. But like for family, you know, so when Grant and Julie got married last year, our nephew, we did theirs. But so the last two I've done have been done via Zoom.
Seriously?
Yeah, because they live in other places. Like, because Claire lives one place, Grant lives another place, and we were in Alabama. But we were.
So this one that's coming up is going to be Zoom?
No, the premarital was Zoom.
Okay. Premarital. I thought you were talking about.
But it's just weird. You know, it's weird because it shows you with technology, but it was great because you'd think in a way you'd lose something by doing it that way, but you really don't. Yeah. I mean, it's a full conversation. You get to know the couple.
Yeah, I don't think we're ever going back to not having meetings via the Zoom or on the internet.
Well, actually, it's a blessing for Dad because his book is releasing in February. But I don't think they're ever going back to like everybody flies to New York. You might like used to when you do a book thing. I mean, it's a week of just getting after it.
You know, I did a few weeks of youth events all on Zoom. Right. It's just all the little squares, like Hollywood squares, but just a much bigger square.
And you were just preaching at the computer.
And they're all muted somehow. I mean, I don't know how all the practical ways it work. And I talk. Then after it's over, they kind of open the floodgates, and it's pretty fun.
So for me this week, I mean, I'm a volunteer. I'm a lay minister now. I don't get paid. But, man, you're talking about feel like a full-time job. So I had three sermons this week, three podcasts, and now a wedding in there, mixed in there, too. That's a week.
That's good. It's noble of you today.
Yeah. Well, it's what I do. So this last Sunday, I preached on this section of text that we're in. So I thought I'd try it out on y'all and see what you thought.
You're a brave person because we're going to tell you what we think.
That's right. I'm not afraid, Jace. So I called this text the king's betrayal. We kind of in White's Radio, we kind of had a king theme throughout the book of Matthew because there's so much about his approach about Jesus and the kingdom, right?
Yeah, we've had several podcasts about the kingdom is at hand, the kingdom is near.
Right.
And this is fixing to happen. Next time I see you, kingdom time.
Kingdom time. So in Matthew, more than any of the other gospels, he really stressed it more. Wouldn't you say? I mean, the whole idea about the lineage and the king.
Which we keep going back to Daniel 2:44 and 7:14, but those are powerful things for our faith that Daniel, via the Holy Spirit and through dreams, he was making these predictions about the coming kingdom, and they came true.
Right.
It just didn't look like what all humans, pretty much all humans, felt like it should look like.
Right.
I mean, everybody here in the context was thinking, well, when are we going to start whooping Rome, and when are we going to shut down all these other kingdoms? But God, in His wisdom, through His Spirit being poured out, showed you that the most powerful force on earth would be the Holy Spirit of God.
Right.
Yep.
When you start looking at the qualities of God, and you have that Spirit in your inner being. You just think about how powerful that makes you.
Oh, man.
You can't be held responsible for your mistakes because God forgave you in Jesus. Even if you were locked up under man's law and broke a law.
Right.
And you can't be killed in a way that you won't return because of the Spirit, Romans 8:11, same Spirit that rose Christ from the dead, is living in you.
Right.
It will give life to your mortal being. So, I mean, just think about that. That was his plan, because a lot of people say, well, what exactly is the kingdom? Yes, it's where God reigns, but it's also what makes it the greatest kingdom ever is we have a Spirit of the Almighty God in us.
Right. Exactly. So
that's a pretty good point Peter makes. Now that you have purified yourselves by obeying the truth, so that you have sincere love for your brothers, love one another from the heart. For you have been born again, not of perishable seed, speaking of the Spirit, but of imperishable, through the living and enduring Word of God. You know, boy, you're talking about a statement.
Well,
you're given seed, the Holy Spirit, that's immortal.
Right. And by the way, that was written down by the man who denied Jesus three times.
That's correct.
On the night of his death. So what struck me, Jace, about this section of Scripture when I was preparing for it was how Jesus had been a part of not only his little community of disciples and people he'd been teaching, but he also has close friends. He's been going back and forth to Bethany during this week. That's where Mary and Martha and Lazarus, you know, live. And so, you know, he was anointed. Then they had the Lord's Supper. So he's preparing himself for what's about to happen. But when he gets to the garden, what struck me about what happens in this next night until they crucified is how alone he was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's almost foreboding. It's so alone. And, you know, it starts in the garden, but even with the Father, there's almost like a distance there because he's like, I'm going to have to go through this. And so I just feel like looking back when you realize what Jesus did, and he basically did it completely by himself. I mean, because the disciples desert him here in this next minute.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's gone. So no support system.
But that's why, you know, Paul said in Romans, you know, when he was talking about the fall of man, when it says he used that quote from the Old Testament where it says there's no one who understands, no one who seeks God. And a lot of people read that in Romans 3 and they're like, man, that's so depressing. But at some point in all humans' lives, once we become an adult, we all go through that. I mean, we all basically leave Jesus stranded.
Yeah.
We come up with our own narrative of life, and this is my life, and nobody's going to tell me what to do, or however that comes out. That's why when, you know, you're making that point, it truly is. He was the only one at the time who got it. I mean, he was like, this will work.
Yeah.
And that's
but everybody else is like, there's no way this is going to work.
And, almost it was against all odds.
That's right. So let's take another break. So my point was, and this you could put this for anything, the path to the right place, which is what Jesus is doing. He's been saying all along, I know what I got to do. I'm going to die. I'm going to be raised. So the closer he gets to the end of this, where we're going, the lonelier it gets. And I thought, well, that's the way it is with everybody. You think about it, when you're asked to do the right thing, usually a lot of people aren't lining up to do it with you. I mean, there's usually people working against you.
Yeah, I'm one of the few people, I guess, in our inner circle that I came to Jesus at a very young age and was serious about it. And the number one memory I have of high school, it's not where I went to school, what I did, my extracurricular things I got into or sports or wasn't friends. Number one thing stood out, loneliness.
Yep.
Because you can't, I didn't play the game. It just, once they backed me into a corner of like, either come, you know, be a hell breaker like us, I just, now I wasn't perfect and I made mistakes, but I just didn't run. And you get cold.
Yeah.
not like a, oh, we're not hanging around you. You just look up.
Your friends desert you.
That's right.
You're just lonely. I mean, it was 2 or 3 years of just very few friends
because you were committed to doing the right thing, which is, that's a great illustration, Jason. I didn't even think about you, which by the way, I talked to Blake Sunday, who's the first guy that you led to Christ. Yep. So he's still around. I did his wedding 30 years ago this February.
You know, well, you mentioned this last week. We talked about there wasn't much written about the boyhood of Jesus. But over here, he's talking to Ahaz, whoever that is. Somebody smarter than me will have to know it. But he's talking to him in Isaiah 7. He said, therefore, the Lord himself will give you a sign. The virgin will be with child and will give birth to a son and will call him Emmanuel, which means God with us. He will eat curds. Listen to this. He will eat curds and honey when he knows enough to reject the wrong and choose the right. But before the boy knows enough to reject the wrong and choose the right, the land of the two kings you dread will be laid waste. So he mentions his boyhood.
Right.
In other words, as soon as it came time, I guess, for your conscience to develop and develop to a young boy. Mm-hmm. From that time on, I mean,
Isaiah
says, I mean, he got lined out, sure enough.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's interesting you brought up Blake. I mean, he was, one of the things that got his attention was I asked him to be at my wedding. And we had gone 2 different directions.
Yeah.
I mean, in our life. And he was, when I asked him to be a part of the wedding, he was like, well, why? I was like, well, just because we've gone in 2 different directions, because he was, I mean, just running wild. I was like, it doesn't mean you still weren't one of my best friends and are.
Yeah.
I mean, we went 2 different. I want you to celebrate this with me, you know? Well, that week, getting ready for my wedding, because I've gone on record many times. My wife, I had already told her, next time I see you will be at the altar. So I mean, I literally went 3 months without seeing her. I couldn't keep my hands off of her. So I'm like, I'll just meet you.
You
there.
Took the we're not going to see the day of your wedding the quarter before the wedding.
You know what? If you change your mind, let me know. But other than that, I'll be there.
That's a bold move, Jace.
Actually, my first thought when she, you know, everybody stands up, you know, I was like, what's going on? They're like, oh, no, this is customary.
It's all good.
She comes in, everybody rises up, and I'm like, man, my first thought was, I have not seen her in forever.
she comes.
Yeah. But that week turned into me and him just having spiritual conversation after spiritual conversation. And I mean, that was like the pivotal moment for him.
You're going to love what he told me, Sonny. So he said, you remember 28 years ago, we studied with, and he's said two guys.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, Blake, I don't marry. I said, we studied a lot of people back in those days. He said, well, I just want to let you know it's working on them. And I was like, really? Yeah. And he said, yeah. And he told about this guy. He said, they never really came around. He said, but this guy's doing a prayer thing. And he said, you know, he said, the gospel never comes back void. And I just thought, man, listen, I mean, that's the ultimate, right? It's the guy that got it.
It's a great analogy, though, because you go back to wherever you were and – you know, we had a lot of good times together and all, but we just reached that point to where it just wasn't going to work with, I mean, what are we going to talk about? You know, how hammered you got the night before? Right. And we just kind of drifted apart because of that, because I just didn't want to be a part of it. And I was trying to survive. But there is a loneliness in there. And look, then he had the same loneliness because all this stuff you thought, I remember the first conversation we had. All these things he wanted to do in a sinful way, you know, be with this certain girl and run with these certain, you know, people, be successful, make money and all that. It all of a sudden he's like, I feel just alone. I mean, you go out there and you do it, and you think, well, that did nothing but just caused misery and heartache. So that's what I'm saying. It's so strange that you think you're having fun and this is going to be great. And then when you look at it, you have a lot more sympathy and a good sympathy for what Jesus did, that he wasn't just hollered at everybody saying, look, I'm or trying to convince you. He just, that's why that powerful verse in this process is that he didn't open his mouth in a way to say, let me explain this to y'all. And I mean, he answered the questions, went through the interrogation, took the beatings, spitting, the whole thing, because it was the plan.
Right. Yeah. Well, and that's so, I mean, that really, so what got me into the lesson, I just watched Braveheart maybe 2 weeks ago. I hadn't seen it in a long time. It was on, so I sat down and watched the whole thing. And I got thinking about movies. I was like, because we talk a lot about movies on there. I thought, you know, like, most of the movies in my top 10, Mel Gibson either directed them or was in them. And I thought, man, I guess he's like the filmmaker. We talk a lot about Eastwood. But when I was watching Braveheart again, I realized how much he was preparing for The Passion, which he would make 10 years later. Braveheart was made in 95. Of course, it's the story of William Wallace. You know, it was this great Scotsman that had rose up, you know, for freedom way back in the old days under... Well, they call him Longshanks, you know. And so, but I noticed at the end, it was a lot like the story of Jesus, because he gets betrayed by this guy that was kind of the only true Scot royal. And he was trying to get it. He's like, look, we can do this. You can lead. And so he winds up stabbing him in the back, you know, literally. And so that the whole thing just falls flat and he winds up dying. And of course, it's that last scene, you know, they're just disemboweling him in front of all these people, trying to make an example out of it. And his last word he yells out, at least in the movie, was freedom, you know. And it was like, and so I thought, you know, Gibson was painting this picture that here was this guy, this great figure who gave up everything for the freedom of other people. And yet in the end, he was alone, totally. No, none of his people were with him. There was a couple of guys there in the crowd looking. The woman wasn't with him. Totally alone. It was a lot like Jesus' story.
Yep.
But
they had killed his wife. I mean, that's right. What started.
Well, and that was my point. So my point was, William Wallace was motivated to free people because of revenge, because they had taken his wife
away. Well, that was just injustice. They were
exactly.
There was no freedom.
When they'd set it up where these nobles would sleep with your wife before you got it.
But look, hey, modern day, you know, you talk about oppression. If some official, government official, knocked on my door and said, okay, we're now going to sleep with your wife.
Right.
Well, I'm fixed to go William Wallace on you. I mean, we're fixed to have a scrap.
Yeah.
That's right. Right now.
Let's take another break. So look, Jace, see how we think alike. There's the next point of the lonely path against injustice, because that's exactly what happened in William Wallace's case. But then in Jesus's case, what makes it so much more bold is he's not motivated by revenge.
He's not motivated by the injustice.
And how could you have any more injustice in what happened to him?
Perfect.
I mean,
whether you're a believer or not, he constantly said, "Can any of you prove me guilty of sin?" Which no other human past puberty can say. Because somebody could say, yeah, because all have sinned.
Right. But even think about the moment when it happened. So in chapter 26.
Before you read that, I remember somebody saying, well, how do you say everybody, how can you prove? I was in a Bible study one time. They said, how can you prove that everybody has sinned? Because I was making this similar point.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't have to prove it. It's true.
Just look around.
Well, but I mean, it was like they were just arguing for the sake of argumentation. But just think about, so a lot of times you read something in the Bible and you're like, we only believe that because it's written, which is true in my case because I'm a believer. But it's actually true.
Right. It is true.
And people are uncomfortable with that because they're like, well, how did all these writers get that right? I mean, you can be the most wacko believing person on the planet, but when you start looking at your life, there's flaws. It's just, and they had it down here, and they figured it out. Was it just by luck, chance, or is it the truth?
So this last opportunity to do it the other way, as we talked about last podcast, Judas had his mind how it was supposed to be done. In verse 50, of course, Judas kisses him. We talked about that last time. And Jesus says, friend, do what you came for. And so he's betrayed him. Then the men step forward, seize Jesus, and arrested him. So now we're going. This is the process. With that, one of Jesus' companions reached for his sword, drew it out, and struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his ear. Now, we know from John 18, that was Peter, once more, impetuous Peter. He's the one that had the sword. He takes a swing at this guy, and I guess the guy turns his head and he just sliced his ear off.
I feel like there's more to this story than written, but I mean, I'm taking what's written, but I just, you know, how do you cut a guy's ear off and that's it? I mean,
it was one swing. I don't know if this guy just got in the way. You talk about wrong place at the wrong time, but I thought about it. But
Jesus put the ear back on.
Well, that's the point. When it's not a rebellion, when you stop and put the guy's ear back on. And you also know that if you can do that, you probably should listen to what this guy says.
You probably can't kill a guy
who can put an ear back on.
That's what I'd be thinking. Ooh.
Oh, maybe we shouldn't.
Did he really cut it? I could have sworn I thought he had no ear.
That's what they said.
He's got an ear.
That's what they said. It must not have been all the way cut off. I mean, can you think of all the things that people thought of?
I've cut my ear before. I mean, I accidentally one time, I was hung up in a bush and I flicked a spinnerbait and Si was in a boat with me and it hit his ear, but he thought it was a bug. So he just reached and grabbed it out, but the hook was in his ear. So he just ripped half his ear off and didn't even acknowledge it, kept fishing. And I'm telling you, in about, I'd say 30 seconds, his white t-shirt was half red.
Yeah.
It was just blood soaked. I was like, Si, your ear, mind your ear. And he's like, good, not that thing bit me. I thought,
boy, that
should I
bite.
Tell him that
you were making some wild casts.
Yeah, but he never figured out that the spinnerbait hit him in the ear. He ripped it off. He thought he had been attacked.
Well, if you're looking down and half your shirt is blood, that would be some kind of pretty good sized varmint.
Thing bit me.
We were catching fish. I'm only saying that story because I think things happen and from people's perspective, and because it just seems like such a crazy place here.
Right.
He cuts his ear off. He puts it back on, but then we proceed.
And think about this,
for the arrest.
This guy was a servant of the high priest. And in a few minutes in the story, he's about to be in front of the high priest. And I said Sunday, you know, him putting Malchus's ear back on didn't do anything to help him with the high priest.
No.
But I bet old Malchus appreciated it. And I said,
you got to think he probably became a believer.
That's what I said. I said, maybe Jesus thought one day he'll need that good ear
to hear the gospel.
Yeah.
You know, which is probably
true. He probably was wondering about it. How do you do that?
Well, Jesus said many times, he who has ears,
he'll run up, I tell you.
Let him hear.
I guarantee you, Malchus was changed.
But think, that's an interesting thing he said many times about, yeah, if you have ears, right, let him hear.
And then Peter cuts the ear off.
It's almost sarcasm or humor that he's like, I gave you ears, but you no listen. You know, you're not listening.
What's the old saying? He gave you two ears and one mouth, and yet people usually go the other way.
Yep.
They talk twice as much as they listen.
Well, we were debating about that today because they were making it. Somebody said that when your wife gets older, she talks more. And then somebody else observed, this is what we talk about in the duck blind. And it was like, well, maybe that's why you lose your hearing when you get old. It seems to all be
to have a good relationship at the end. You're going deaf and she's talking all the time.
Yeah. That way you're not arguing all day and every day because she's talking more.
I've never actually thought about
it. And
that.
You can hear.
It's all by design.
Because
she doesn't lose her hearing.
Well, the
women here fine.
Oh yeah.
But Phil, I mean, I don't mean to get into your personal business, but the last three or four times I've been down at your house, Kay's been talking to you and you've been staring and it's like you weren't listening. And I thought, I'm not sure he can hear her.
I've got in a zone to where it's not going to affect me.
But it doesn't hurt her. Feel it. Y'all are fine with that arrangement.
No, she kids me about it. You know, you don't even listen to what I'm saying, are you?
So in other words, he has ears, but he's not here.
That's why Jesus said it. I now got the point. He's like, if you got them up there, I want you to go ahead and use them. And don't you do that to me. So don't do that to Jesus. Sorry. Yep.
Let's take our last break. So the point is, he tells him in verse 52. He tells Peter, put your sword back. For all who draw the sword will die by the sword. And again, from my mindset, I was making this comparison between, I just watched this movie Braveheart, which was all about the sword.
Yeah.
But at the ultimate end, what do you get? You know, you're not going to get what you...
Which is probably why Judas didn't like how Jesus was, because it wasn't about the sword.
That's right.
I mean, you got to think that you get a central theme in here. They kept waiting for this physical assault. Even when we get to Acts 1, are you now going to restore the kingdom?
Right.
I mean, when are we going to fight?
That's right. Which was the thing. So I made the point in my sermon that Peter thought he was in Braveheart, but he was really in the Passion of the Christ. He forgot his role here. And so he tells him, he says, do you not think that I cannot call on my Father and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels? Do you remember what happened when one angel of the Lord went through Egypt one night? I mean, every firstborn died. Can you imagine what would happen if legions of angels showed up?
I really wish I'd have heard this lesson now. I mean, because I didn't go hear your lesson on purpose. Because I knew we were going to talk
purposely
about it. Well, I didn't want to taint it. I didn't want to sit there in criticism and say, oh, you shouldn't have said that. You shouldn't have said that. But we're thinking just alike, because I've said that before too. You know that song, that old song? It's like, he could have called 10,000 angels.
You remember Mason Smith used to always lead it, the big
and
old guy?
Yeah, and he sang it angrily.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he could have called 10,000. And I always thought as a kid, or, you know, I wasn't a kid when I heard it, but a teenager or whatever, I thought, well, he only needed one. What's this, 10,000? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, one angel against as many humans as you want to form. I think the angel, because they're not bound by the same laws of gravity and nature as we are. That would be pretty destructive.
And every picture we get of an angel in the Bible, not what you get from Hollywood, but from the Bible, these were terrifying beings. I mean, most people fell out like they were dead when they saw one. I mean, mortified, terrified. Yeah. So he makes the point, you put away the swords, boys. I mean, I came here to fulfill scripture. And again, my point is, I keep coming back to it, he knew that what was going to happen. And yet they were continually trying to change and alter what he came here to do.
Yep.
And he kept saying, I came to fulfill.
So you had the lonely road that was right. You had the lonely.
Then I had the lonely road against injustice, which actually then takes us to the next section, which is in 57. When he winds up in front of the Sanhedrin and the chief priests, they've come up with a complete kangaroo court. Because they can't. The problem is they can't kill him legally because they're not really in charge. The Romans are in charge. Now, which makes perfect sense because you think about it, if you had an occupying force, but you had a religious sect that could decide to kill people, what if they decide to kill you?
Yeah. It's no different than what happens today.
That's right.
When you are opposed to someone, they basically just try to whip up the crowd against you.
Right. When you can't win the debate of ideas, that was the point I made Sunday.
I wrote a book about it.
That's right. When you can't win the debate of ideas, you got two choices. One is you can change your mind because you can't win the debate. So you change, or you can form a mob and try to shut up.
Attack the other person.
Jesus was under the council culture's wrath.
That's right.
The entire time he was there.
Exactly.
Nothing has changed.
Nothing. And I made the point Sunday, Dad, that his cancel culture was much more dangerous than our cancel culture.
Very much so.
I mean,
their ultimate way to
but
shut
ours
you
is
up
getting pretty,
is to kill you.
We're getting pretty dangerous.
We're getting there. It's getting there. There's no doubt about it. Yep. And I couldn't believe the parallels.
I'll point that out in the book.
I couldn't believe the parallels, Dad, because you're watching these courts, and you'll see a court now. You watch a case on TV, you're watching it. You're just like, this truth is so plain. How are these people missing it? But they missed him, too.
Yep.
And so they came up with all these lies, and finally the moment of truth, if you want to call it that, comes to the point where he says, think about this. He's telling
what
Jesus.
Verse are you?
This is verse 63. Jesus remained silent through all the fake news. Then the high priest said to him, I charge you under oath by the living God. And I thought about that statement. He's talking to the living God. But he tells him, he said, tell me if you are the Christ, the Son of God. And then Jesus says, yes, it is as you say, but I'll say to all of you, and this is the double down, in the future, you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the Mighty One and coming on the clouds of heaven, which takes us back to Matthew 24. What he said was, you're right. Not only am I the Messiah, but you ain't seen nothing yet.
Well, he was kind of subliminally saying, you just think you're in charge.
That's exactly right. Judgment is coming.
Yep.
And that was his point. Of course, look at the response.
And, I mean, did it ever come?
Oh, my goodness.
We
talked about that. Over a million people died.
He was introducing a new definition of the word power.
That's right.
Yep.
That's exactly.
You think about all these officials, you know, and look at our world. It's all about who's in control politically and who has the power and who has the biggest gun and the biggest stick or whatever. And we're talking about a power here that can levitate and evaporate only to come back and come on clouds, and you don't need a plane.
No.
And this is laughable.
Yep.
So I'll read this last part because we don't have much time. In verse 65, the high priest, when he hears this, he tears his clothes, which was a custom there. I don't agree with anything you're saying. And he said, he has spoken blasphemy. Why do we need any more witnesses? Look, now you've heard the blasphemy. What do you think? And they said, the people, which again, Jay's back to politicians, he already made his mind up. But he asked the people, like, they're going to say, what if they had said, you know, release him? Mm-hmm. He is worthy of death, they answered. And you'll like this, Jay's. I said, you know what made me think of it? Legally, that was not true because he had done nothing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But Jesus said he came to die. So he was worthy of anything that he said he was going to do. And I thought about Revelation 5 when they were saying, worthy is the Lamb who was slain, worthy of praise, worthy of honor, worthy of glory. All those things, I thought, he is worthy, but not because of you and your injustice.
That's right.
But because of him. So look at their response. They spit in his face, which is the most vile, disgusting thing. One of us were to spit in each other's face, we're all family, we love each other, we'd be fighting mad.
Well, that's still today. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. That's the worst thing. They spit in his face, they struck him with their fist, they slapped him, and then they mocked him, and they said, prophesy to us, Messiah, who hit you?
Yeah, making and, fun of it.
Oh, yeah. It was just such a demeaning, terrible thing. But, you know, the whole point is this whole lonely path he took, and then later, of course, we'll talk about next time, he's before Pilate, but it's the same thing. It's people who think they have power that really have no power.
And the biggest thing he had to overcome, you know, emotionally, I guess, as even as being a human in this moment, was then all his friends leaving.
Right. That's it. Nobody left but him.
Yeah.
And he does the right thing, which is very powerful. So anyway,
which was the thought I had when I came to Christ and my friends left. Well, you know, I felt sorry for myself after a few months. And then the more you spend time with Jesus, you realize, you know, true power is on my side. I mean, you stick this out, good things come your way that are indescribable compared to the earthly things you can achieve. And I mean, you look what he did. It changed the world. It gave us a vision of God. I mean, that's how we came to know our Creator.
Right.
I mean, what a plan. I mean, it was so awesome that nobody even noticed.
Yeah,
that's right.
You just think about it. The Son of God came to earth and nobody noticed until he came back.
He did it totally alone. Yeah. So next time we'll pick up when the Romans are going to take over, and it's going to be the very end, or they think they're taking over, and we'll talk about the crucifixion. But then we get to the best part, and that's the resurrection. So,
well, this is a good way to start the new year.
It's an awesome way to start
very
the new
good
year.
Way.
That's exactly right. Happy New Year.
Thanks for listening to the Unashamed Podcast. Help us out by rating us on iTunes. And don't miss an episode by subscribing on YouTube. And be sure to click that little bell to get notified about new episodes. And for even more content that you won't get anywhere else, subscribe to Blaze TV at blazetv.com/unashamed.